VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, it was 80 years ago today, December 7th, 1941, our nation was attacked. The location was Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. The president at that time, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. 2,403 people were killed. 68 of them were civilians. The rest were made up of Navy, Army, and Marine personnel. Another 1,178 were wounded, including 35 civilians, over 4,000 in all that were either killed or wounded in this attack. The National World War II Museum reports two battleships and over 160 aircraft were destroyed. More were damaged. Well, taking us back to the times and events taking place at the time of this tragedy, we welcome back to Crosstalk William Federer. Bill is a nationally known speaker. He's a historian, an author, president of Amerisearch Incorporated, a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. He's a speaker in the American Minute Daily Broadcast. He's authored numerous books, including America's Guide in Country Encyclopedia of Quotations, Who is King? Who's the King in America? Socialism, the Real History from Plato to Present, and The Faith of FDR. Bill, thanks for joining us today.
Jim, great to be with you.
Bill, if you would, take us back to the times leading up to this tragic event at Pearl Harbor. I know Franklin D. Roosevelt was campaigning for a third term, very adamant in saying, you know, I've said this before, but I will say it again and again and again, you boys are not going to be sent into any foreign war. But I'd like you to take us back to the time, because this is World War II. We were told, World War I, that was a word that was going to end all wars, but that never did happen, did it?
It didn't, and we had the two fronts. We had in Germany with Hitler, and he was the head of the National Socialist Workers' Party, and he conquered enormously, and then he made alliances with fascist Italy and with Japan, and you began to see. So the Nazi Party took over Germany in 1933. Hitler was the chancellor. Some interesting things. It was a republic prior to that called the Weimar Republic, and Hitler's party had a violent group attached to them, sort of like an Antifa BLM-type group. They were called Brown Shirts. They were nicknamed Sturmabteilung, stormtroopers, because they would storm into the meetings of Hitler's opponents and disrupt them. And then they would lock arms and block access to public buildings and block streets. Could you imagine people locking arms and blocking streets? And then they went into the cities and they smashed the windows and looted and set on fire over 7,000 stores owned by Jews on the night of broken glass, Kristallnacht. Could you imagine people going into the cities and smashing windows and setting buildings on fire? And then, oh, did I mention their capital got attacked, the Reichstag? And evidence points to Hitler's own people setting the fire, but Hitler blamed his opponents for doing it, and he rounds them all up and holds them and then has them shot without a trial. Could you imagine the government perpetrating an attack on its own capital and then blaming innocent people and then using it as an excuse to round them up? When the dust settled, Hitler didn't have any political opponents left, and Germany switched from a republic to a dictatorship. And so then he began to invade Poland and invade into other Eastern European countries, and the British, they sort of let him go, and they Hitler would lie to him, and then finally he conquered Italy and got in 1936, and Ethiopia in 1936. Japan joined the alliance in 1937, and they conquered Manchukuo in 1937, then Korea in 1937, China they conquered, and then Austria and Czechoslovakia in 1938. And then the Soviet Union got involved in the war in 1939, and then Britain got in the war. And then Albania, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, Samoa, Australia, New Zealand, Lithuania, they're all getting involved in the war. In 1940, you have Malta, France, Denmark, Belgium, Hungary, Greece, Norway, they're all sucked into the war. And then you have Romania, Slovakia, Netherlands, Luxembourg, Latvia, also in 1940. And then 1941, Croatia, Bulgaria, Finland get pulled into the war. Belarus, Estonia, Yugoslavia, Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Hong Kong, 1941, they're all pulled into the war. And America is sort of sitting on the sidelines. And we're between the the two fronts of the war. And there's a thought going through the politicians in D.C. that if we don't get involved and Hitler wins, then we'll be isolated with no friends. And so the dilemma is that FDR had made all these promises that he wouldn't get involved in the war. And then toward the end of his speeches, he began to say, of course, unless, of course, we're attacked.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it sort of set the stage for the attack. And
Tell us, what was his thinking, Bill, at that time? I mean, because he was, he would, you know, said over and over and over and over again, you can find so many quotes that we'll not go to war. Going back even to his fireside chats and so forth, he really promoted staying neutral. When he is seeing all these countries get engaged, what was his thinking at that time?
Well, the country as a whole did not want to get involved in the war. And he knew that if he would say, I want to get involved in the war, he would not win re-election. And so it's one of these things. There's a Lord Acton, was a British statesman, and he said, official truth is not actual truth.
Yeah, interesting.
When the government tells you something that's officially true, you know that it's their version of it. And So
he added that caveat then, we're not going to war, not going to war, except in case of attack.
Yeah, so he added that caveat back, his last speech before we were attacked. There is evidence that he was not feeding the information of the Japanese buildup to our forces that were in Japan. And there's a lot of ink and a lot of people that have written on that. There was a famous general named Kimmel, four-star Admiral H.E. Kimmel, and he stated in a 1958 interview with Notre Dame Law School Dean Clarence Mannion, and he said, General Short and I were not given the information available in Washington and were not informed of the impending attack because it was feared that action in Hawaii might deter Japanese from making the attack. Our president had repeatedly assured the American people the United States would not enter the war unless attacked. The Japanese attacked the full fleet, and then the American public joined in the war. Another similar situation was in England, where Winston Churchill, his analysts had cracked the Enigma cipher, the secret code that the Japanese were using, and they found out that the Germans were using, and they could have warned a town that the Germans were going to attack it, but they knew if they warned, then the Germans would know that they had cracked the Enigma code, and then we wouldn't be able they wouldn't be able to know what the Nazis were planning. And so it's one of those stories that gets written about, but Winston Churchill it's said that he didn't warn that city of Coventry of the impending attack because he didn't want the Nazis to be tipped off that they were able to read the messages in the ultra-secret Enigma code. So you had leaders that were making these type of decisions, and it's should they have done it? You know, I mean, we look back, we think, yeah, they should have been honest. But on the other hand, Hitler was a serious threat. I was recently with a friend of mine, Jerry Newcomb, and he's an author on Christian heritage and did lots of stuff with D. James Kennedy. And Jerry Newcomb's wife is from Norway. And she said her mom remembers when the Nazis had taken over Norway and they were killing people. And he says all the pastors stood up to the Nazis. And you know what they did? They just rounded up all the pastors and put them in concentration camps. And then they had the teachers teaching their version of critical race theory. You know, that Jews were inferior and other races were inferior and that the Nazis, the Aryan race, was superior. And all the different teachers says, we're not going to teach that. And then he had them arrested and put in concentration camps. In Norway, they were distilling the Nazis what's called heavy water, and it was needed as a step in the process of getting nuclear weapons. and they were shipping this on a ferry full of people from Norway over, you know, to Germany. And the Norwegian, you know, Secret Service thought, well, Hitler is so bad, if he got a hold of nuclear weapons, this would be the end of the world. And so they blew up the ferry to prevent Hitler from getting this heavy water. But all the Norwegian people that were on the ferry died, too. Hmm. So you had people making these decisions that were, you know, tragic, and it's debated whether they should have or not. But at that time, the threat of Hitler was extremely serious. It was, and so
Bill,
that was the setting of the world.
Yeah, so we're going to come here to December 7th, 1941. You had mentioned about what Churchill may have known about, you know, the code and so forth. What was there any, were there warnings that were available for what was going to happen to Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, so the Japanese had their ambassadors in Washington, D.C., and the U.S. was tightening the screws on them with trade-wise and even oil import-wise, and they wanted to negotiate longer and longer. And finally, in other words, they were sort of being pushed into a position of deciding to do the drastic attack. One of their generals had gone to American schools, and then he was in charge of the Navy. And his comment after the Pearl Harbor attack was, we just awoken, the sleeping giant. But the Japanese, they were conquering all of Australia and the Philippines and, Manchuria. They were conquering for decades. The Japanese, my son taught in Korea for several years, and so we went over there to visit him. And they were telling us how the Japanese took over Seoul, Korea, and were dismantling all of their ancient Korean buildings and taking them away. And then the Japanese took the Korean women and used them for comfort women, you know, which basically they would use them as prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then that the Japanese would take the Korean men and stick them on the front line to fight the Americans, and they would have machine guns pointed at their backs and say, you fight the Americans or we'll shoot you in the back. And so a lot of the Americans were shooting people and didn't realize they're actually shooting the Koreans, but the Koreans were between, you know, us and them. And when we, you know, I was discussing with these Koreans about us dropping the atomic bomb on Japan, they're like, we're so thankful that you did that. It's like, oh, okay. All the rest of the world were apologizing for it, but they were. So Japan was very aggressive. The setting leading up to. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say we're right up against a break here. And listeners, you're tuned to Crosstalk on VCY America. William Federer is with us here today. He is nationally known speaker, historian as well. He is also heads up a company called Amerisearch, a publishing company dedicated to researching our noble heritage. After the break, we're going to come back to that Sunday, December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor, and we'll unfold the events of that day. Back in a minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, has it finally happened? Can computers outthink humans?
No, they can't, Chris. Now, they can outperform humans on some difficult task, but they're not really thinking. For instance, calculators can do mathematical manipulations much more quickly and accurately than humans. But keep in mind, they were designed by humans and programmed to do these various tasks. They're not thinking, they're just doing the things they were designed to do. No, Chris, machines can't actually think, nor do they exercise real judgment. This is reserved for mankind, created in the image of God, just like it says back in Genesis.
Thanks, Dr. Morris.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. William J. Federer with us here today on the program. And remembering Pearl Harbor 80 years later. We, in this segment, will be getting to December 7th, 1941. But we know one of these that were involved in, certainly, that launched this attack upon the U.S. came from Japan. And, Bill, I understand that there's some very interesting parallels between what was going on in Japan and even what was going on in the United States.
Right. So in Japan, they had a emperor in the 1800s. His name was Meiji, M-E-I-J-I. It's called a Meiji Restoration. And so he was an emperor, but he was industrializing. He gets away from the feudalism. He allows private citizens to own property. He abolishes the four social classes. And the samurai didn't like him because they were a class unto themselves. They were the militaristic class. So he more or less modernizes the country. 1905, Japan has a war with Russia. And Teddy Roosevelt helps negotiate the peace. Then they end up having one of the largest maritime empires in history. And so Japan is conquering through all the Philippines and Korea and parts of, Indochina and the Dutch East Indies. They annex Korea in 1910. They took control of parts of Russia and Siberia in 1918. The people... In beginning in 1912, the people began to experience unprecedented prosperity in Japan and freedom. It's called the Taisho democracy. And you see pictures of the 1920s in Japan. It's very similar to the Roaring Twenties in America. The ladies are wearing the same clothes as the ladies, the flapper clothes. The men are wearing like the tuxedos and the black top hats and so they're experiencing this freedom, democracy, very similar to ours. Then we have a stock market crash in 1929, and it has global repercussions. Why? Because we were buying lots of stuff from Japan, and all of a sudden, boom, no more buying. And so Japan suffers. This 1929 stock market crash also caused problems in Germany, and in Italy and in Russia, allowing Stalin to seize power in Russia, Hitler to seize power in Germany, and Mussolini to seize power in Italy. So we had this global stock market crash, and people were suffering, and you'd have these strong leaders come, and they would say, oh, we're just going to, have to make decisions and get stuff back on track. And it was good on the one sense, but then they ended up becoming militaristic and then bad on the other sense. So the Showa Emperor Hirohito, and inspired a resurgence of nationalistic spirit, which the samurai really liked. They were the militaristic class. And so they began to centralize power more and more and more into the Japanese government. And then they even brought back an old belief of Shinto followers that the emperor was an incarnate deity who must be obeyed without question. And the citizens were forbidden to criticize him. And when you would come into his presence, you couldn't even look up at his face. You had to look at the ground. You couldn't look at him. So this idea that, you have these leaders usurping power, and they always want to see themselves as a godlike figure. 1937 was a big deal. Japan invaded Nanking, China. There was supposedly a railroad explosion because the Japanese had taken control of a coastal area of China. And they said, well, the railroad track was exploded. And so they used that as an excuse to conquer Nanking, China. Later, an investigation was done, and there was no railroad explosion. It was just a made-up excuse to round up all the enemies, sort of like the Reichstag being burnt, and Hitler's the one who attacked the capital, but he blamed it on his opponent. So you always have to – dictators always want to do an insurrection but blame it on their political opponents. Anyway, so the Japanese went into Nanking, China, and killed an estimated 200,000 people. And they would have reports running in the Japanese newspaper of this commander, killed so many, and this other commander killed so many. Sort of like sports scores.
Wow.
So which army is killing more? And then they didn't want to, you know, use bullets, and so they would use their samurai swords, and it was pretty bloody. But so that was this is a dangerous mentality that they had.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 1941, it was Japan had the third largest naval power in the world, and they were the ninth largest economy, and that's when they make the alliance with Germany and Mount Mussolini in Italy. So they're called the Axis powers. And so that's why we see that they've been conquering area of the Pacific and more and more and more. And that it was predictable that they were wanting to get Hawaii, but we had not been prepared for it. We had troops over there, but our whole military machine in America was not up to par. The one after they did take Pearl Harbor, there were plans to take the American coast and take California.
Hmm.
And at one of the military board meetings, they brought up the Second Amendment in America. They said you could conquer the American army, but in America, everybody owns a gun, and you would have to fight the entire population. And that's when the Japanese military strategist says, well, we're going to have to rethink invading America.
Yes, yes.
They did invade Alaska, and they did invade the Aleutian Islands, and there were several battles. So we talk about the Hawaiian Islands, but there were the Aleutian Islands, and there were several battles up there that thousands and thousands were killed.
Well, Bill, if you would unfold for us December 7th, 1941, Sunday at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, well, by the way, I do want to mention the Bataan Death March that also took place, where the Japanese, when they took the Philippines, they marched thousands of soldiers to their death. But Pearl Harbor, it's interesting, the very week of the Pearl Harbor bombing, you had Franklin Roosevelt and his wife Eleanor Roosevelt had begun an annual reading through the Bible.
National Bible Week.
As National Bible Week.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the first instance of the National Bible Week where they would, you know, begin it. And so they had to sort of interrupt the first day of the Bible reading on the NBC radio to announce that they had been attacked. Eleanor Roosevelt, who was there with the Bible reading, says, "The words I heard over the telephone were quite sufficient to tell me that finally the blow had fallen and we've been attacked in the Philippines and Hawaii, in the ocean between San Francisco and Hawaii. Our people had been shot and killed, the enemy." And she said, "I think it perhaps is significant that we should be beginning Bible Week today. This is the first annual Bible Week so designated by the Layman's National Committee." And so,
and that's so interesting, folks, because, I mean, here they are, and can you imagine this happening today? They're actually reading the Bible over NBC, over radio, and all of a sudden that Bible reading is interrupted with an announcement as to what took place at Pearl Harbor.
And now there is, we have a book, it's called Miracles in American History, Volume 2,
mm-hmm.
and there's a chapter in there about the Japanese pilot, that led the attack on Pearl Harbor. He's the one that said Toro, 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 which means tiger, 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 which was their signal for we're catching our enemy totally by surprise and attack. And it was Fuchida, Mitsu Fuchida. It's I'm not really good with the Japanese names, but he ended up having a tremendous testimony, and he ended up becoming a Christian, and he ended up becoming an evangelist. And that I might maybe have a few minutes to share on that. But as far as the actual Pearl Harbor, 350 Japanese aircraft, and they came in totally by surprise. They sank five American battleships, and then they sank three American destroyers. 400 U.S. aircraft were destroyed. Had they bombed the gas tanks on the island, that would have crippled us.
Hmm.
Because we could quickly bring in more planes, but to bring in all the oil and rebuild it, that would have put us off like a year in responding. But because the gas tanks weren't touched, we could respond relatively quickly. There were over 4,000 killed or wounded. And so this was an immediate shock to the nation. And as a result, it caused us to get into high gear with responding. And the battles in the Pacific with this samurai mindset, it was more shameful to surrender than to die. And so rather than surrendering, they would commit hara-kiri. They'd take a knife, stick it in their own gut, and rip it up, right? Mm-hmm. So this means that they would fight to the death, and they were brutal. The Battle of Okinawa, which was April 1st, 1945, you had 60,000 troops landing on Okinawa. It was called the Typhoon of Steel because of these kamikaze attacks. The Americans had pretty well successfully cut off oil going to Japan, and so they would take their ancient pine trees and uproot them and distill the pine sap into oil and then use that in their planes to fight against Americans. And so they were, and then they would teach the pilots how to take off and not land. My uncle had been there at Okinawa, and he says that they were just flying and smashing into everything. And it went on for 82 days at Okinawa. 38 ships sank and 368 damaged. But this attitude of Japan was why Truman was convinced to drop the bomb. He says, if we invade into Japan, they're going to fight to the death before they'll surrender, and it's going to be millions dying. And so, again, not a defense of the dropping of the bomb, because the one, Nagasaki, was the most Christian city in all Japan. In all Japan. So it's a shame that was a non-military target that killed Christians. But
Bill Federer with us here today in Crosstalk. Bill, I understand President Roosevelt addressed a joint session of Congress. What did he say?
Well, this is the famous speech, the infamy. Says, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by the naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. He says, no matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people, in their righteous might, will win to absolute victory. We will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never endanger us again. He goes on, hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territories, and our interests are in grave danger. The confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God.
We're going to pause right here because we're up against a break. But did you hear those last four words? So help us God. Now, that we're going to pick up on that right after the break. William J. Federer with us here today on Crosstalk as we remember Pearl Harbor 80 years later.
VCY invites you to obtain an audio recording of the Gospel according to John as narrated by Brad Canterbury.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God.
John's Gospel, presenting the words of Jesus, the way of salvation.
For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever...
You can share this as a gift or for listening over and over on your daily commute. VCY America is making available this narrated Gospel of John on two CDs for a donation of $12. Call during business hours, 1-800-729-9829. That's 800-729-9829.
But these are written that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing ye might have life through his name.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. William J. Fitter is our guest here today on Crosstalk. And yes, he is author of numerous books, including Miracles in American History, which we have previously offered on Crosstalk. We'll get the information here, both Volume 1 and Volume 2. They're available as a set, both of them. You can obtain them individually for a donation of $18 each, or for a set of Volume 1 and Volume 2, our way of saying thank you for your support of $33. And to obtain those, you can reach our switchboard at 800-729-9829, 1-800-729-9829. And you can obtain Miracles in American History, the set, Volume 1 and Volume 2. And, Bill, you've got several stories in there from the era of World War II in these books.
Yeah, it's fascinating stories. And one of them, again, is Mitsuo Fuchida. And Mitsuo Fuchida is the Japanese pilot that yelled out, Toro, 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 or Tiger, Tiger, Tiger. And he led the attack at Pearl Harbor. And he later tells the story of after the war, MacArthur's the governor of all of Japan, our General MacArthur. And the Japanese are being summoned to different trials for war crimes. And like, for example, George H.W. Bush was a pilot who was shot down and he was rescued by a submarine. But some of the people in his group were shot down and they were taken to an island and the Japanese cannibalized them. It was written about in several different books. So they had the war crime trials afterwards, but Mitsuo Fuchida did not commit those crimes, but it's an honor-shame culture and their gods were defeated. And so they were when they would conquer an enemy, they would kill the enemy because it was considered a shame to surrender. And so it was, they expected to be killed, but they weren't, but they felt totally defeated. And so Mitsuo Fuchida tells about someone passing him a track, a Bible track, and it's Jacob de Chaser, who had been a prisoner of the Japanese and treated all terrible. But then after the war, he went back there as a missionary. And so when Mitsuo Fuchida read this Bible track and he read about Jesus giving his life and not having done anything wrong, anyway, he converts. He becomes a Christian, and then he becomes an evangelist. And he even spoke with Billy Graham, and he would go on crusades, and he'd speak with Billy Graham. But just a fascinating story of redemption, that the very pilot that led the attack at Pearl Harbor later became a Christian evangelist.
Wow, tremendous. Bill, so as we finished that last segment, President Roosevelt had that joint session to Congress and ended with those words, "So help me God." These are words that they have had attempts to really scrub these words. Matter of fact, did not want these words remembered.
Yeah, so the World War II Memorial, they had planned it, and the architects and everybody, and sort of during the Clinton administration and so forth. And the decision was made to put an excerpt of quotes of FDRs and so forth, but not one quote had a mention of God. They even had this address that we just talked about, and when it says, "We will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God," it's all within the same sentence. And on the World War II Memorial, it says, "We will gain the inevitable triumph," period. And then you go to Snopes, and they say, well, they couldn't put everything on there, and
yeah,
it wasn't an intentional thing. And it's like everybody knew that you look over the Lincoln Memorial. It mentions God.
Right.
Both sides read the same Bible, pray the same God. Even the FDR Memorial mentions God. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all these, Jefferson Memorial mentions God. All these memorials mention God, and here this big one doesn't. And a lot of people who had loved ones die. My mom's only brother died in the Operation Overlord, which was the D-Day operation. So these were Christian guys that went in. FDR passed out Gideon's New Testaments and Book of Psalms to all the soldiers in World War II. Mm. Right, so most of these guys fighting were Christian. And yet, here on this memorial, there was not one mention. So after 4 years of fighting, an estimated 15 million battlefield deaths and 45 million civilian deaths, and the Axis were defeated. In 2004, the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. was finally dedicated to honor those who had died. There's over 500 words inscribed on this memorial, and the phrase, "So help me God," is not one of those. And Chris Long of the Ohio Christian Alliance, he had been getting my daily American Minute emails, and he saw the one that I did mentioning that God's not mentioned on there. And so he took it upon himself to approach his Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio and his Senator Rob Portman of Ohio and say, can we do something about this? And so he spent years, and he pushed and pushed and pushed, and then they pushed and pushed and pushed, and they got Senate Bill 1044 passed. And it was one of those situations that President Obama was the president who signed it. Why did he do that? Well, he had just been doing something that was getting him some negative press, and the timing of it was this would, since FDR was a Democrat, and it's him giving a prayer, you had Democrats say, well, we can support FDR saying God. And then, of course, the Republicans wanted it on there, too. So it was just this perfect timing, and it got signed, and then it needed funding. And so since it mentioned God, the federal government didn't want to pay anything. So they approved it, but they didn't pay for it. So a whole other set of individuals giving money, ddayprayerproject.org is the site. But it finally got approved, and it's in the planning stages now. So you can go to the World War II Memorial, and off about 50 yards to the side is a little circle, and they have a temporary plaque up there with the prayer on it. But they're going to build a nice stone circle, and they're going to have the prayer, you know, permanently put there.
Wow. Bill Fitter with us here today on Crosstalk. Our phone number is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Maybe you've got a question for Bill regarding the things we've talked about here today. Some of you listening right now remember D-Day, and I'm sorry, not D-Day, but Pearl Harbor, the attack on Pearl Harbor, D-Day happening, of course, in the month of June. But, Bill, many have speculated what would have happened if the U.S. had not stayed neutral or had stayed neutral and not gotten involved with this world war. What are your thoughts on this? What's your speculation?
Well, I think that Hitler would have gotten a hold of the technology that the left, the globalists are getting a hold of right now. So I think it probably would have sped up this global push about 50 years prior. It bought us time. It bought the world time, basically, that we got involved. But there is still this global push of wanting to control everybody. And they'll use whatever technology is available. And, you know, one of my books I go through is called Rise of the Tyrant and Who's mm-hmm. the King in America. And, yep. But I track how the most common form of government's kings in world history.
Yep.
And as the centuries go on, these kingdoms get bigger because with military advancements, the dictator can kill more people. So instead of killing with a rock like Cain killed Abel, they kill with a bronze weapon or an iron weapon or a phalanx spear that the Greeks had, Alexander the Great, or a scimitar sword that the Muslims had, or you know, a gunpowder that the Chinese invented. The weapon improves, and the dictator's like, hey, I want to use this to rule. And but we see now with 5G and with tracking and satellites in China, you know, they call it a technocracy, where they were using all this technology to control people. But I think we would have seen that happen like 50 years earlier, if we had not gotten involved.
Yeah.
I think that spirit would have crushed all these little smaller countries. And so, like, you know, with the United Nations, it's, you know, we've seen this phenomenon where the corrupt countries and the OIC, Organization of Islamic Cooperation, 57 very wealthy Muslim countries with money, and they like buy off all these small ones and then threaten one. So now they have this huge block of votes, and they're putting themselves on the Human Rights Council. It's like, really? You have no human rights in your country, and you're on the council? So there's this undeniable desire to concentrate power and use it oppressively, and now they have technology on their side. I think Hitler would have been happy to use all the, you know, he was developing nuclear weapons. He was developing missiles. Vernon von Braun, who started the, basically pioneered the American space program, Vernon von Braun was a Nazi scientist. And when the war was getting close to ending, he and a bunch of scientists wanted to defect, and they were choosing between defecting to the Soviet Union or defecting to America. And he said that they knew what they had was, you know, cutting-edge technology that could be used for good or bad. And he says, we decided that we wanted to defect to the side that had the Bible.
Tell you what, we've got some callers lined up here. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Ralph is calling from Menno, South Dakota. Ralph, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention a couple things. You know, FDR said, so help us God. And if you think about some of the things that happened, especially one thing in Pearl Harbor, you know, we did not have any aircraft carriers in the harbor when they attacked. And you know, they were hoping to get at least one, if not more. And that really changed the way the war went. You know, it became more of an air war, I guess. You know, that it kind of made the battleship and destroyer not obsolete, but, you know, much less involved. And also, then only about 6 months after, in the Battle of Midway, you know, Japan still had the, I mean, they were superior in power. And, you know, you might say by chance, although there is no by chance, you know, I guess by God's providence, at least I know the one carrier, the Japanese had their aircraft, you know, armed, ready to take off, and they didn't know if they should attack Midway Island or go and find our force, naval force, and attack that.
Ralph, I'm dead. Tell you what, I'm going to have Bill address us because we're just 45 seconds to the break here. Thank you for your comment. Bill, your response here to Ralph.
Yeah, so the Battle of Midway was a turning point. Those American code breakers had been able to decipher the Japanese code and realized that they were moving toward Midway, and so we were going to ambush them. And so the situation was the Americans were waiting, but we couldn't find where the Japanese ships were. And so we had planes take off. There was a torpedo bomber squadron led by John Waldron, and they came off the U.S. carrier Hornet, and they were going to attack the Japanese carriers. And Waldron tells his men, you know, basically, you may not make it. So none of them made it, but all the Japanese planes took off to fight them, and that left their decks open for the next bunch of Americans that came and were able to sink three of the four Japanese carriers.
Bill Federer with us here. Thank you, Ralph, for the call. We've got to take a break here. Our number, 800-733-9829. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. I've talked about Frederick Bastiat's book, The Law, many times over the years. And I urge all of you to go online and read it for free. You'll find it online. You can read it for free. He wrote it in 1850 when France was going through one of its many socialist revolutions. Bottom line, he says the purpose of the law is the defense of individual property, individual rights. It is individuals coming together collectively to defend individual rights. He says the law is perverted when it is used for greed and philanthropic purposes. Greed and philanthropic purposes. In other words, the government is used as an instrument to steal from one to give to another. The government becomes, and the law becomes, the exact opposite of what it is supposed to do: secure the property and freedom and liberties of others. That's exactly what's happening in America. This nation cannot continue down this path until Americans once again understand the constitutional, God-given purpose of the law: security and protection.
Just a reminder, Bill's books entitled Miracles in American History are available through Crosstalk, Volume 1 or Volume 2 individually. Our way of saying thank you for your support of $18 or more, or the set for both of them, a donation of $33. We've got Greg calling in from Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Greg, you're on the air.
You know, on Pearl Harbor Day, you could not have any better guest in the entire country than Bill Federer. You just couldn't. And I am such an admirer of you. And, you know, I have a comment and a question. My dad was in World War II. He'd be 101 if he were alive today. And he saw a kamikaze shot down. And I forget what Pacific island my dad was on at the time. The plane landed on land. And the pilot, the kamikaze pilot, got out of the plane, and he was dying, and he was going to be shot by a soldier, but he made sure that he was lying on his back facing the sun for that to happen. And the question I have is, have you read a book by Diana West called American Betrayal?
Are you familiar
with
that?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Well, please read it, because it changed my thinking. She's not as prolific an author, but she is an incredible writer. And she talked about way beyond what most people know about Roosevelt's capitulation to Stalin, how Roosevelt, and by the way, it's a less than 400-page book, but it's got 1,000 footnotes, so expansive that those footnotes themselves could constitute another book. Mm. It's so well documented. And Roosevelt is ignoring MacArthur in the Pacific, and at the same time shipping 500,000 Dodge Jeeps to Stalin.
Great.
You know, and it was Stalin's wish that we have the second front and leave Italy and attack from, you know, the beaches of Normandy, because that would weaken our troops in Italy. And we pulled out. See, we would have beaten Stalin to Berlin. And she asked the question, who really won World War II in Europe? Because it paved the way for Stalin to take over all of Western Europe.
Thank you, Greg, for that. Bill's not familiar with the book, so it's hard to comment on that. But thank you so much for bringing that to our attention here. Nancy is calling from Erie, Pennsylvania. Nancy, you're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I love America's God and Country, and that is a great book by Dr. Federer.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to say, I have a ladies' magazine from the early 30s, and it has an article in it about Hitler, and it's very positive about Hitler. And it's always kind of surprised me, and I wondered if you could speak to the public's opinion at that time about what was happening in Europe. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
Yeah, I real quick on the previous comment, FDR did do something terrible at the Yalta conference, where he decided to give away half of Europe to Stalin and condemned half of, that population to, 70 years worth of the Soviet Union. So he should have not been in that negotiating position, because it was just a couple months before he died. But nevertheless, I wanted to make that comment. But as far as
Hitler and popularity,
World War One, the Germans were forced to pay reparations to the countries that they had invaded. So, in other words, they had to pay back. But the German country was pretty well devastated after war, so they had this double situation of, and so the German decision was, hey, let's inflate the mark. Let's just print lots and lots and lots of these marks. That was their dollar. And we'll pay back these other countries' reparations with this worthless money. The problem is, it also made all the money in Germany worthless. So if you had saved up money, you wouldn't buy anything. Because so there's stories of men throwing these wads of bills out the window at lunchtime to their wife, who's waiting under the window, and she'd run down to the grocery store and buy stuff as fast as she could, because by evening time, that money was worthless. And they'd have to have twice as much money to buy the same amount of stuff. You see pictures of little kids building like, you know, little, you know, not a sandcastle, but they'd build little houses in their backyard with stacks of these dollar bills, these German marks. I mean, they were printing it so fast. And so it was Hitler that begins to go to Munich, to the beer halls of Bavaria, and he begins to talk about, you know, turning the country around. And he was a strong leader, and he talked about, you know, giving the German people hope. And so for the first part of him, he was saying all the right things. So if you ever meet, you know, a politician and they're giving all these really good speeches and they're promising all this really good stuff, but then when they get in power, that's when they begin to rule through mandates. And so, you know, in a sense, our Constitution was written for one purpose, to prevent a president from ruling through mandates.
Wow.
They wanted to
wow.
take the power of ruling and separate wow. it into three branches and separate it from the state level. They wanted to make sure no one person was calling the shots. But what happened in Germany is he got to power because he was all smiles and promising stuff, but then once he gets in power, he starts tightening the screws and becomes this terrible dictator.
We're going to see if we squeeze one more call in. William in East Troy, you're on the air.
Yeah, Mr. Federer, love your materials, promote it often, love VCY.TV, but the Navajo Code Talkers providentially helped out during World War II because a Presbyterian minister and his wife brought their young son as a missionary to the Navajo Code Talkers, and VCY's played that video about the history of it, but providentially God worked it all out so they could help our military so we could defeat the Japanese. Can you talk about that?
Well, Bill, you got 30 seconds.
Well, it's one of the most fascinating stories because the Japanese, the Navajo did not have a written language. It was just verbal. And so what we did is we had these different Navajo in the different groups, and they would talk to each other. But the Japanese couldn't figure it out. Unfortunately, one of them was captured, and he was tortured, but he refused to tell what his Navajo words meant. But, yeah, it's a great story of how we were, the Indians helped us to win the Pacific War there.
Wow. Bill Federer, our guest today. By the way, folks, his website, AmericanMinute.com. You'll find a lot of helpful information there, resources, historical info as well, AmericanMinute.com. Bill, thank you for being available today for a very informative program.
Well, thank you, Jim. And lots of these stories are in those books, Miracles in American History, that people can get through VCY.
Very good. And the number to do so is 800-729-9829. God bless you, folks. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.